Off the Ball Breakfast.
I would push my chips in for the New Zealand game, pick the full team, get the rah 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 goal.
Yeah, even though you don't normally believe in momentum, go a bit of momentum.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome along. It is Monday's Off the Ball. It is Will O'Callum with you because some other members of OTB partied a little bit too hard in Stradbally at the weekend at Electric Picnic. Owen Sheehan's on a break. We've got no Nathan Murphy. So you've got me with Nick McCarthy. Nick, how are you?
I'm good, Will.
For
the record and for the lawyers listening, Owen was on a planned day of leave today. It's not as a result of anything.
I think I can insinuate it. And Stephen Doyle, how are you, sir?
Well, gee, you're rubbing everybody up the wrong way tonight, Will, because Owen always presents me first and then Mick.
That's true.
It's unbelievable. Like,
that's in his contract, actually, to say late on a Monday.
Yeah. Right, hang on,
can I get on to my lawyers there? Just, I'll be back in a moment. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it was no discrimination against either of them. Mick McCarthy's to my left and Stephen Doyle is to my right. So I went, let's go around clockwise and come back again.
I support it.
I'm no diva.
Yeah. Just before we went, I went, you know what, that was a hell of a transfer window. Premier League teams have spent more than ever before, and we've had a deadline day where there was at least 12 or 13 reasonably major deals that were going on across the day, including a new Premier League record for Alexander Isak. Say it to Stephen Doyle, he goes, you know what, I bloody hate transfer deadline day. So let this be your moment of
the
therapy.
The misery is
Stephen.
Here
yeah.
on a Monday evening.
Bring us back down to earth now that it's officially slammed shut.
Stupidest, to be honest with you. I know. Listen, as a football supporter, and if you're following any of these teams, it's great excitement. And I'd say, because I got home pretty late last night from Anfield by the time I got into bed, and I saw the news, Alexander Isak's off the river. There's a lot of Liverpool fans who would have been in bed when that news came out. And I would say, when they woke up this morning, we're getting Isak and Mark Gay. It was like Christmas morning. They would have been better than Christmas morning. Like, I would say Liverpool fans today are absolutely walking on air.
There's an element of it being close, like kind of a light Christmas morning. So you know the way it's like on Christmas, I'm looking for the latest game of FIFA, for example, or something like that, or maybe the new PlayStation that's out. Mm. But there's very little of them in the country, and nobody can get one. But so they're, you know, they've your parents or you know whoever you're writing letters to or whatever, you know, might be like, you know, teasing you along that, like, you know, it's very hard to get. Like, you know, Santa might not be able to get you the new PlayStation or whatever, but you kind of know you're getting it. You kind of know. You kind of feel like they'd let you down stronger
but Santa's if you weren't getting it.
But at the same time, you can't be fully sure.
Yeah.
So Isak was always going to go to Liverpool on transfer deadline day.
Yeah.
But until it happens, you're not sure. So they woke up this morning, it was genuinely like Christmas morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
The present they knew they were getting for the whole month, they finally got it.
Yeah. I'd agree with Steve-O on one thing here, which is there are a lot of football fans who seem to enjoy the two transfer windows more than the actual football on the pitch.
Yeah.
There's some fans who get that dopamine hit between, who has my club been linked in? Even if your team isn't going particularly well at the time. Ooh, well, we might sign that player. And as long as they do loads of business, it's great fun.
Yeah, and I love sport, but I love football. And I love football. I love sitting down. I watched a lot of football over the weekend. And it's great. And this stuff just going on, it's like, oh, come on. I'd nearly love if the clubs just did the business. And then when the transfer deadline closes, they all just release a list. Here's all the players we've signed. And say, do, 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 do. Okay, update all our little lists and stuff. And that's grand. But it's just, I don't want to be like a moany old journalist here, you know.
While you're here.
You're kind of trying to keep your bulletins up to date and, you know, who's gone here? And it's like...
That's incredibly busy, but there's an excitement to it. I think it's more than a few, Will, though, to your point.
Look, like David Ornstein and Fabrizio Romano wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't a market.
100%. Mm. And we've talked to people, say, in The Athletic, for example, about the about their analytics on transfer stuff versus football stuff, and they do brilliant tactical breakdowns and everything like that, but it's the transfer stuff that's keeping them in business, you know? And look, that is what it is. But I do understand it. That's the thing. It's like, I kind of, you know, it feels a little bit like less than, but at the same time, like this summer, I made a concerted effort to just break away from English/European football and the merry-go-round and the nonsense, and felt great after it, like was ready for it to come back when it did, but was like miles behind on transfers and stuff. And it's funny, August happens and by now, like I'd love to see my analytics of how long I've spent on Twitter today.
Yeah,
because you're just checking it every 5 seconds, and I'm not doing bulletins every hour like Steve-O is.
Yeah,
you know, but it's a pure pure addiction.
Yeah.
And whether it's
yeah.
good for us or bad for us is almost secondary to us admitting that it is an addiction.
I have like, four
who really cares if Harry Wilson goes to Leeds or not? Like, who cares? Yeah. Even Leeds fans don't really care that much about that tomorrow. But today, and be you, all end all.
And do you know something? Listen, I've got to put this into perspective as well, because listen, I'm not being any sort of a Bohemians fan, and we also had a transfer overnight, and I woke up this morning, I felt like I might have got a little bit of a Christmas present. But it's the scale of these things. You know, we've signed a guy who's an international for Malawi.
Mm.
He was released by Cambridge United at the end of last season. And his name is Jubril Okadina. And I'm really excited about it because Bohemians need a centre-back in there who's got a bit of pace, somebody who replaces Sean Grennan. And, you know, he may not be any Alexander Isak, but, you know, he's a special player for us, and hopefully he will help O's continue their yeah. season really well.
And Aston Villa signed an international who was released by United at the end of the season as well this year. I'm less excited about it.
It was
Swedish international as well. Look, Liverpool got a Swedish international. Everyone's banging on about a Villa sign one. Nobody cares. What's going on?
A Villa get a guy who went 2 months without a club, and Jadon Sancho who couldn't get out of Manchester United, but you've done them both.
And Harvey Elliott looks like, yeah. Again, I don't know if both of them are true or not. I haven't got the latest updates, but I presume this 7 o'clock thing is just a nonsense, really, is it? It's like, if you send your papers in a certain direction in the wind before 7 o'clock, then you're allowed to complete the transfer.
I'd nearly say it was probably Sky Sports, probably said, listen, we can't have our lads 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning waiting for faxes to come through and all this kind of stuff. Is there any chance we can wrap this up for 7 so we can get them home? Like, you know, it's just poor Gary Cotterill stopping off in services like at 4 o'clock in the morning in the motorway trying to get a bit of food.
It's ridiculous.
The one thing I learned from Sky Sports this week, they don't use fax machines anymore.
Yeah.
Apparently, it only stopped very recently, though.
Oh, really? Eh?
Yeah, because you still have to have it as like basically a signed document with a timestamp on it and so on. Yeah. But now it's acceptable if you scan the document and the email has the electronic time on it. That's fine. Yeah. But to Mick's point, lace sheets are fine.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got that the deal is basically agreed in principle by whatever 9 minutes ago, you've got hours, possibly even until tomorrow, to complete those deals. And I would suspect with the nature of some of these large ones that are coming in as well, they probably will take a while to get it fully confirmed. Coming to YouTube, Liverpool, they'll have the league won by Christmas. Gyökeres is Shamak 2.0. Yeah, no.
You were there, Steve-o.
You were there, Steve-o. Go on. Assess Gyökeres' performance here.
I didn't notice him. I kept looking for him.
You know,
TV, like, as in, he's there, isn't he? Yeah.
I was talking to our colleague, Phil Egan, about this a couple of weeks ago in the office, just saying that he doesn't look very dynamic. You know, he's... And yesterday I was kind of looking at him on the pitch and, you know, by the end of the match I was kind of feeling sorry for him because the lad was working his socks off and he was really trying hard to bring teammates into play when he got the ball in front. He kind of reminded me a bit of Tommy Coyne in his heyday playing for Ireland, you know, kind of, you know, doing those, the hard yards, that thankless task of running the line on your own up front. And the thing about Gyökeres though as well is he lumbers. He's lumbering around the pitch and he just doesn't have that kind of he doesn't seem to fit into that Arsenal team. Now, he has only started and even Arne Slot in his press conference last week before the game against Arsenal was talking about Ekitike and he said a couple of really interesting things in that presser, but one of them about Ekitike was saying that, look, it's going to take him time to get up to pace with Premier League football, and he wasn't even talking about him playing the game with the ball. He was saying without the ball, the pace of the game without the ball is something that's a bit of a shock to players that haven't played in the Premier League before, and that's something I actually noticed with Ekitike yesterday. But I said by the end of, because Gyökeres, he certainly, you know, he was putting in a huge amount of effort, but he wasn't getting much reward. I thought Madueke played brilliantly for them on the right hand side, but then as the game went on, Milos Kerkez starting to get better for Liverpool. He was really good in the second half for Liverpool. We still probably yet to see the best of him going forward, and that's one of the big threats that they will be hoping to unleash from Kerkez over the season. But look, the first half was poor. It was a really poor first half. I was there with Glenn Whedon, was making his debut and off the ball yesterday. Mighty fine co-com and company for the afternoon. But I think the feeling was that Liverpool, They just sort of cranked it up a little bit in the second half. They got their passing together a bit better. They were a lot pacier with their passing, and they were finding gaps then in the Arsenal defence. And it was just that negative approach again from Mikel Arteta. You cannot keep going into games against your rivals with that negative. It's like the old Mourinho thing of, well, you know, if I draw with, you know, the four matches with our top two rivals, you know, and then worry about winning the rest of the games, why don't you go out and try and beat your rivals, you know? And I think it was actually, if Liverpool had lost that game yesterday, I don't think it would have mattered too much. But the fact that Arsenal have lost it, I think that's a big result.
It feels significant. So under Arteta, Arsenal haven't won at Anfield or haven't won at Man City.
The last time Arsenal won at Anfield, Arteta was in the team.
Yeah. What's that?
That's
crap. I heard that yesterday. It's amazing, yeah.
So,
like, for me, they looked like two very evenly matched teams. And sometimes that just happens, that, you know, the home team gets a magic goal and so be it. You don't take too much from it. But it does feel like the difference between them. And look, Arsenal fans defend Arteta to the hilt, and I can see where they're coming from. You know, he has done, in so many ways, a great job. We're talking about bringing Arsenal to becoming the best team in England or the best team in Europe. You know, you need to be in a, like, there's a very small margin of error there. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like that consistently their manager's attitude or the way he sends them out is the difference between the top teams and the second tier. Very, very high second tier, very high achieving. Arsenal could win the league this year. I wouldn't rule it out. But I wouldn't back them. I look at two very evenly matched teams there, and I think Liverpool are going to do better than them.
Do you know what's interesting
as well?
Because
they'll go for it. They'll have a shot.
And we saw more of it in the second half of last season, how that negativity from Arteta was seeping out into his interviews. Like, you know, the famous one after Paris Saint-Germain. Like, there was an awful lot of, you know, looking to put the blame somewhere else, and that his team were being picked on almost. And that kind of negative attitude seeps into a dressing room. It's like, kind of, you know, they're not accepting responsibility for their own failings. And interesting. And look, I know you can't really judge Slot at the moment either, because he's gone in there and all he's done is won all the way. Now, look, I know they went out of the Champions League, whatever, but they won the league last season. It's very hard to judge a man when everything is going so well. He's getting easy questions in press conference, all that kind of stuff. But it was interesting. The first question he was asked last week was some sort of a general question about the Arsenal game. And he says, you know, he unprompted brought up the fact, he said, look, I know Arsenal are really good at set pieces, corner kicks especially, and we've been poor defending. We've been really bad this season. We've conceded goals from corners. He brought that himself up unprompted, you know, and I think that was, gives you kind of an indication into the mentality of Slot compared to Arteta, who is maybe looking for excuses for why things are going wrong.
Yeah, and look, Arsenal were missing Saka. Odegaard's got the shoulder injury. Do you take out two creative forces from your attack? At the same time, Arteta did pick three fairly conservative midfielders when he had Zubimendi, Rice, and Mikel Moreno. He played four centre-backs.
Mm. See, what you're saying about their injuries, absolutely valid. What we're saying about, like, everything we're saying in defence of Arsenal is valid, except for the fact that, like, it's not like Liverpool have been imperious at the back. Mm. Like, there's an element, I don't think they would be like this all season, but at the moment, they're there for the taking.
New players, they're disjointed.
And your defence is a lot better than Newcastle's, and it's a lot better than Bournemouth, and they're the best defence in the league. Trust them to be that. I understand that's due to their system necessarily and not just their players, and Saliba goes off after 5 minutes, and you have to wonder if their attitude would have been as conservative if Saliba stayed on. Again, I don't mean to dismiss any of this stuff, but ultimately nobody is surprised that Arsenal didn't go to Anfield and go for it. Mm. And that says something. You know, you can come back at me with an individual excuse, but nobody was surprised by it. And Liverpool could be got at. And that was their most comfortable game in defence of the three, of the four, probably, including the Community Shield that they've played so far this season. And Arsenal are the best team they've played. Explain that to me, you know?
Yeah, and that goes back to maybe Gyökeres as well, because Canale's been really poor in the first two games, but he's been playing against quicker, pacier attackers in the previous two matches. And the other thing is just Mosquera, who came on for Saliba, excellent. Yeah. He was really, really good. I think he's going to be worth keeping an eye on for that.
When you talk about the lack of pace and maybe the inventiveness in the Arsenal team, why not get Essay on earlier? The braver call was to get him in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know why. Why didn't he? because he certainly showed a couple of flashes in the very short amount of time that he had. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that would have been a better shout.
WhatsApp line, by the way, if you want to get your comments in, 0879 180 180. Dermot is a Liverpool fan who enjoys the transfer window because of the way it's finished. He said, I woke up to the Isak news around 3 a.m. I couldn't get back to sleep after I saw the notification.
One thing we should mention before we move off to yesterday's match, it's kind of annoying, and not just because he scored a 35-yard goal into the top corner. The best player on the pitch yesterday was easily the player who's going to be ruining all our lives on Saturday.
Yeah. And Kerkez as well, who was brilliant in that second half.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Showing some form all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like, having done nothing for the
first half. We might have a bit of decent, you know, attacking play down that right-hand side. Well, maybe not now that Kerkez is playing as a left-back.
But that's international football, isn't it? It's like, everybody has like the championship level players, and all except unless you're England or France or Spain or whatever, but all the other European teams have the championship level players, and they have so on. And if you have three or four really good players like that are even Liverpool level, or what Szoboszlai is looking now is like Liverpool star level, you know, you can go really far internationally if you just have two or three down. Like
Roma level.
Yeah, well, so far so good.
Big Ev again on Saturday. Yeah. And
tidy assist.
Do you know something? Apparently his grandfather passed away either on the day or the night before, and that's awful. Like, I can't imagine what he's going through.
You forget as well that he's 20.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and how young you are to lose your grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. So it's awful for him. And Barry, his dad, it was his father. And he went out and put on a brilliant performance against Pisa, got the assist for the goal, got to link up a bit with Dybala in that game. He was, again, just really, really good performance by him. So, listen, hopefully more of the same.
It looks like he's getting on the ball. He never got on the ball at Brighton. Mm. He was always kind of drifting, looking for the space that was never there the way they played and stuff. But from, again, I haven't watched the matches, but I'm seeing the clips and the little highlights thing and all, and he's coming deep and running with it a little bit, and then getting, he's laying it off for the eventual run into the box, as opposed to waiting for everybody else to do it at Brighton.
The only pity about it is, it kind of seemed when Parrott was in such good form before he got the injury, he could have put Parrott to lead the line and let Ferguson drift into areas and make space for himself. Mm. I have a feeling for these two games now, and maybe I'm wrong, they might put Ferguson further forward because of a lack of centre-forward options.
It'll be Ferguson as Zaz, I'm sure, won't it?
But I actually said it to Glenn Whelan post-match yesterday. I said, could you play the two of them together, Parrott and Ferguson? I know, maybe for future games. And it was almost like, you know, the way he answered was like, what kind of silly question? Of course you can. It's like, you can play the two of them together. Yeah, absolutely.
Man, small man. Like, for God's sake. Football was built on it.
Right, before we move off the big game of the weekend, what's Arne Slot had to say about the game yesterday, Steve?
Yeah, so as we said, Dominic Szoboszlai scoring with that brilliant free kick late in the game at Anfield to make it 3 wins from 3 for the defending champions. And what does Arne Slot put the good start down to?
Mentality, having to bring quite a lot of new players in because quite a few left. And then if you have to start the season against Bournemouth, who were last season already really good, and this season again are already on 6 points, if I'm correct. I think I am. Playing Newcastle away, which is for every single team in the league one of the most difficult away games, and then Arsenal at home, which is definitely one of the 3-4 the most difficult games of the season. And then already doing what we are doing. We're not perfect. We weren't perfect last season, by the way, as well. But still, what you can see is a great mentality, and everybody wants to work so hard to get a result over the line. And then once you need a little bit of luck, which we had in Newcastle today. But I've said this so many times. I think it was Michael Jordan. The harder we work, the more luck we get. And that is, I think, something that you can say about this team. They work incredibly hard. And there will be moments in the season where we work just as hard and we don't find the luck of scoring a goal. But we always give ourselves a chance because we work so hard.
Other games yesterday afternoon, Man City lose again.
Sorry, yes.
The sheen has gone off this team, Stephen.
Yeah, and we spoke about it on the Premier League preview and off the ball, making a couple of us thought maybe just City seemed to be maybe on the way out under Guardiola. Like, you know, it's kind of, listen, 2 or 3 games into the season, you won't be making any big calls in now, but there's just something there not clicking really, is it, with City? And they were beaten last night 2-1, or yesterday afternoon, by Brighton. James Milner scoring again, which means he scored, apparently I saw a stat, and I'm sorry I can't give credit to whoever it was on Twitter, saying that he scored against goalkeepers from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2010s now.
That's unbelievable. Sorry,
or 2000. Sorry, 2000 was the last decade. Yeah.
The other stat is that he became the Premier League second oldest goal scorer, and he's already this Premier League second youngest goal scorer.
Right.
So he's got Teddy Sheringham ahead of him, and he's got James. He'll never get younger than James Vaughan, unfortunately. But he could get older than Teddy. Who knows?
I wouldn't put it past him.
So 39 and 16 are.
Imagine being on both ends of that list.
That's insane. It is absolutely insane. When he scored his first Premier League goal, Fabian Hertzler was 9 years of age.
Ah, oh, jeez. That's unbelievable.
That's creepy, actually.
Yeah.
Considering he's his manager.
He's the dressing room. Ah, we'll just defer to James on this.
Meanwhile, West Ham surprised 3-0 winners away to Nottingham Forest yesterday at Villa Park. Villa slumping to a 3-0 defeat to Crystal Palace. Villa keeper Emi Martinez was left out, and his manager, Unai Emery, was asked why.
Without Emi Martinez not in the squad at all tonight, why is that?
Bisotto. Marco Bisotto.
Where is Emi Martinez, though?
Marco Bisotto.
Will he be your future goalkeeper?
Marco Bisotto. The time is over.
I feel like I need the internet to make an American style kind of like Senate hearing or something where they keep asking people questions and then it's just like every going, Marco Bisotto.
It reminded me slightly of Super Bowl media time where you're not going to get fined when you
who was that?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh my God, what was his name? Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch, the Seahawks. Yeah, yeah. I'm just here so I don't get fined. That was it.
But literally, Emery was counting the seconds down until he saw the 1 minute is up on this pre-match interview and I'm out of here.
Wow. Yeah.
That was first time to do this, though. I sent you at Side Steve. Do you remember when they got into Europe last year?
Yeah.
The Sky reporter went straight away, it must be great to be back in the Champions League. And he just kept on saying Europe repeatedly.
Yeah. So I love it. I think it's great. You know, it's like when you get so many managers who give, you know, rubbishy interviews, this stuff is great.
Kind of can't go out and lose 3-0 at home after it, though.
Looks like Martinez is going to stay, Mick. How do you feel about this?
It looks like... I don't know. Is this
strange,
thing,
isn't it?
It's one of those things that I think can be sorted over the course of a long time between January and now. I was a little bit kind of sore at him yesterday. I think you look at the opposition, you look at Mark Ahe putting in the performance of his life, scoring a cracking goal, celebrating wildly, staying on the pitch for 10 minutes to kind of like cheer the Palace away fans afterwards, and knowing it's his farewell and kind of saying like, you know, doing like putting in the performance of his life when he's like a day away from leaving the club. Martinez isn't in the right headspace and can't play. You know, that is questionable behaviour, but it's probably not the end of the world. I think the fact that he wants to go to Man United, I don't know, maybe last night I was sort of thinking, you know, there's a lot of talk about, like, you know, the way it went with Arsenal for so many years, and Villa were the ones that came in for him, and he's had the best years of his life at Villa, and he's, you know, became the world's number one and so on, and won the World Cup and all while he was there. And at that, seemingly, there was a genuine emotional connection there. And it is tough to realise that that's all bullshit.
Mm.
It is, you know, even though probably deep down you kind of know that anyway, you felt with Martinez such an emotional character, it felt a little bit more real. But at the same time, he wanted to go. So, you know, there is actions that the club have taken as well that can't be ignored in all of this. You know, in a club struggling financially, he is the highest earner, and they were shopping him around. You know, and even today, straight after, they found a bidder for him straight away when United didn't want him anymore. And it was Galatasaray, and Martinez said no, because he doesn't want to leave England, because his wife has set up a business in Birmingham and it's thriving and he wants to stay where he is. So, you know, I think there's fault on both sides. If he comes back from international duty with a kind of a smile on his face and maybe a little bit of sort of contrition to the manager and to some of the long-term players, you kind of think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
They didn't buy any goalkeeper.
It's true.
Do you know, like, it was an 18-year-old on the bench last night and I thought Bizzot was going to get sent off. And luckily, Tyrone Mings was on the line, or else I think he would have been. And so, you know, they didn't sign a goalkeeper. He's staying. I think he'll reintegrate. But it was an awful night, because it was this sort of feeling that it's all collapsed very, very quickly. And then that was, you know, we kind of saw that in the first two games, and we saw it with the transfer window. And then the Martinez things happened. Very, very popular character. I was in Villa Park for the Juventus thing, and it was the night they chose randomly for him to come out before the game with his trophy for winning the whatever the award is for the best goalkeeper. The best goalkeeper of the year. Yeah. So he had two of them in his hand, and he came out and ran down to the Holt End where I was, and it was a big celebration, and he went back in. This is after the warm-up. And, like, I mean, this guy was so popular. Mm. Will that ever come back? It's tough, you know. And then they go out on the pitch and put in this abject, awful performance, and it just all feels over. Now, you know, you get your couple of signings today, and maybe they come back after a little bit of a break, and most of them are off on international duty. You come back, things feel a little bit different. It doesn't feel as end of the world, and maybe it picks back up again, but it's not been a great start.
No, maybe they shop them out in January again. League of Ireland last night, Steve, a big win for Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh Honohan and Matt Healy on the mark as they won 2-1 against Drogheda United in the SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division. And that result leaves the Hoops 9 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand.
So I've got all the transfer trackers open in front of me here. We're waiting to see. Yeah. There's a few of them that weren't completed by 7 o'clock but could be completed later on tonight. So particularly one of those transfers to Liverpool, which one hit a snag?
Well, it was reported earlier this afternoon that Mark Gahey would undergo a medical before signing for Liverpool. That was going to happen in London. The Premier League champions agreed a deal of over €40.5 million with Crystal Palace for the England international centre-back. Palace were due to sign Brighton's Igor Julio from Brighton as a replacement, but there was an issue with his medical. The Guardian stated Gahey to Liverpool would still go ahead. The Athletic was claiming that the move was in jeopardy. So that was the last thing we heard about that one. Doesn't seem to be any updates yet. No, in fact, Liverpool have submitted a deal sheet for their attempt to sign Mark Gahey. They now have until 9 p.m. to complete.
Penny so. For Glasner's thoughts on all this. So,
Chris Glasner, certainly not happy, Will. I'll tell you that much. He's not happy.
But like, he's also not been able to get a replacement in. It felt like Palace and Parrish were more than happy to run this right down to the wire. The hope would be you get to the end of the transfer window, maybe you try and convince Mark Gahey to sign another contract because his contract is up next season. Mm. I totally understand the hierarchy want to get a fee for him.
Yeah.
But if you're Glasner, you're left ridiculously short now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be, at this stage, like, you know, you're going to be relying on somebody maybe coming through the academy or something like that. They've obviously got other players there, but losing a player of such stature. But as you said, the club couldn't afford to not get a fee from if he wasn't going to sign a new deal. So £35 million for a lad in the last year of his contract is a pretty good deal for centre-half, I think.
Yeah, Miguel Delaney's come with us in a few minutes. We'll talk about the ESAC deal, which is about to become a Premier League and indeed a British transfer record. Newcastle didn't quite get the €150 million, Steve, but they got close to it.
Just under €145 million, which is, £125 million. It was expected the 25-year-old striker is signing a six-year deal before joining with the Sweden international squad this evening. His international boss, Jon Dahl Tomasson, confirmed this afternoon that he was going to meet up with them later this evening. Now, in turn, Newcastle United are replacing Isak with Yohan Wissa, who they've paid Brentford €63.6 million for, and he is signing a five-year deal at Newcastle. Harvey Elliott looks set to leave Liverpool on loan to Aston Villa. There's a reported €46.2 million obligation to buy clause in that one. The Villans, meanwhile, have signed free agent and former Manchester United defender Victor Lindelof, and also were close to signing his old United teammate Jadon Sancho, still waiting for confirmation on that one. Manchester United have agreed a deal worth €21 million plus add-ons with Royal Antwerp for a goalkeeper, Sine Lammens. The 23-year-old was making his way to Manchester to finalise his move and undergo a medical earlier today. Real Betis have completed a deal to sign Anthony from United. An agreement was reached between the clubs for a permanent sale for a total of €25 million. The figure broken up into an initial €22 million plus add-ons there.
Not to give away how the sausage is made here, but Steve-O has written down €25 as opposed to the M at the end of that, which seems realistic with the amount of loss that Manchester have had in this deal. Yeah.
I like to keep my currency as euro, even for the English deals, but there's a 50% net sell-on in that deal for Anthony as well for United. Also, exiting Old Trafford, Rasmus Højlund. He's completed a loan move to Napoli.
The whole bomb squad.
The bomb squad's gone. And Højlund, who is the opposite of the bomb squad.
So he's going to Napoli on loan. And if they qualify for the Champions League, they will sign him for €50 million. Incidentally, I don't know if you saw that clip of Scott McTominay putting a header over the bar for Napoli over the weekend. And somebody showed a close-up of him. And he actually, like, you don't have to be a lip reader to see him going, Mamma Mia. Scott McTominay, wonderful stuff.
I am enjoying how he's embedding himself into Italian culture. I did see he did an interview last week and he said, I didn't like tomatoes before I came to Italy, but I've got the real tomatoes now.
Oh, that's great stuff. Anyway, back to the real business here. Anthony, of course, should mention 9 goals in 26 games across all competitions with the La Liga club, and they're going pretty well in the early stages of the season, although did lose to Athletic Bilbao at the weekend. Man City have a deal in place with Paris Saint-Germain for Gianluigi Donnarumma and have agreed in principle personal terms with the player. City also finalising a deal with Fenerbahce for the sale of Ederson. City need an assurance of the Ederson deal before completing the Donnarumma one. Brian Broby has completed his Sunderland medical in the Netherlands. Sunderland will pay €20 million plus add-ons for the Dutch striker.
Yeah, the Ederson one I find hard to understand. He's been pushing for a move for a while though. So up at Saudi last year. I get the feeling it's him that wants to leave more Sutton City.
Yeah. So cheap though, isn't it? Like, it's maybe there's a sense of like,
you've given us a lot.
He's given us everything, yeah. But I don't know. I wonder if they've given up on him a bit, or maybe
not as reliable. I don't think. He's been a bit shaky over the last couple of seasons. Sorry, I've just noticed as well the loan deal, Nicholas Jackson to Bayern Munich from Chelsea, has also been completed as well. So Jackson goes an initial loan with an obligation to buy worth €81.5 million.
So big part of that deal, and the only reason I spot it was because a Sunderland fan had it up on social media earlier on. So Mark Gay, not Gay the defender, but the Spanish striker, had gone to Sunderland. He had bought his jersey, and now he's had a U-turn and go back to Chelsea as part of this deal. So he's looking for Sunderland to refund his jersey, unfortunately for him. But Mark Giroud is gone from Sunderland back to Chelsea. So 8 weeks, I think it's going to be before they've got Liam Delap back again. It could be worse than that because of the hamstrings. So it's a weird one for Jackson, though. He literally just touched down. He went, I'm so happy to be here at Bayern Munich. And then I think people may have went, turn your notifications on. Unfortunately, your mate's out for 2 months, but they got a deal done in the end. Republic of Ireland squad, what's the latest?
Well, Johnny Kenny has been handed his first ever senior call-up. The centre-forward from Sligo replaces the aforementioned Troy Parrott, who, as you mentioned, Will, was ruled out by his club boss at Azzy Alkmaar through injury. Kenny has scored once in his first two league appearances of the season for Celtic. The Irish squad start their preparations today ahead of Saturday's home fixture against Hungary. There will be some press engagements tomorrow. We'll have some feedback from the squad tomorrow evening, hopefully.
Yeah, Dublin's Fair City on YouTube as well. A regular contributor in the Hurling Pod live YouTubes too. Woeful deadline day for Celtic. The club is in a bad state. Rodgers could walk for a second time. He was somewhat lack of quality yesterday as well, Steve, but that is now officially the worst XG game of all time, 0.33 combined.
Yeah, thankfully, Will, I was up in the air.
You don't ever have to watch it.
I would have been watching, and I'm glad I wasn't.
You know, it's so grim, though, because they had the pre-match stuff where the Celtic fans are in the little corner of Ibrox at the rain, and the atmosphere was unbelievable, and the colour and everything. And you're like, what an occasion this is. And then it's just like two awful football teams. Like Tom English was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning. He was talking about like it being the worst day of affairs for both Glasgow clubs that he can ever remember. And like it's a real pity that like Hibs and Hearts and teams like that with the potential, Aberdeen maybe, can't get their act together enough to actually use this opportunity in this window to actually challenge them. But they're not much better at the moment either, unfortunately.
Yeah. And some further, I'm not sure if our texter has been made aware of the news, but Ajax are advancing over a deal for Anderlecht striker Kasper Dahlberg, which means they will beat Celtic to that signing. And apparently the clubs were initially far apart on the structure of a deal worth £10 million, but Ajax hopeful of providing more money up front if their deals with Sunderland for Brian Broby and Bertrand Traore go through.
Very good. Two Irish deals that happened in the last kind of hour or so as well. Jadosi Ogbeni has gone to Sheffield United on loan for the season to come from Ipswich, and Michael Obafemi has added another club to his collection on loan. He has gone to Bochum, who are in the second division in Germany as well. Steve-O, thanks a million for joining
Bochum
us.
Juniors.
No, unfortunately not, no. Mick's going to be back with us in a little bit. He's got plenty to say on the football show about the weekend just gone by as well.